Welcome to Out of Bounds. I'm Tish Perlman. My guest is Lizza C. Johnson. Johnson is a licensed marriage family therapist who has been in private practice for over 25 years in Huntington, New York. She was educated at both San Francisco State University and UC Berkeley. She leads workshops and groups and is a certified clinical meditation teacher. Following her experience of caring for her mother through the last stages of her life, Johnson wrote a book called Take Me Home, Walking on Sacred Ground in the Last Stage of Life. It was published last year by Wingspan Press. I'm speaking to Lizza Johnson by phone from her office in Huntington, New York. Lizza Johnson, thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Now, before we begin to discuss your book, Take Me Home, can you tell us a little bit about how you decided to become a therapist?
I was always interested in consciousness for some reason, and I studied all different forms of healing, and I went to University of California, Berkeley during the time when, you know, there was the huge, you know, uprising.
Mm-hmm.
And it very much influenced me to be a thinker. And also, I think my family, there were a lot of issues there that made psychology, you know, a subject of interest as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've heard
so
that often.
Kind of started early.
Yeah, I've heard that often from people, that they go into psychology if there's something in their family that they're trying actually to understand.
Yeah.
Yeah. So tell us about the origins of this book, Take Me Home. It began with a dream, according to your introduction, a voice telling you to tell the story of your mother's life. Take us from there.
Well, it was a totally unusual experience. I've never had anything quite like this in my life. A voice, it was feminine, woke me up with, write the story of your mother's life. And I didn't even think twice about calling mom the next day to tell her, you know, let's write your book. And she had a very interesting history. She was a real, you know, pioneer. She lived in Canada on a homestead. And I thought the book was going to be about her early childhood experiences because they were so interesting to me. But the thing is, if I hadn't called her that next morning, she would have died. And I would never have been a caregiver, and therefore I would never have written this book, which, you know, feels like it was a very important book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, and it was foretold that you were supposed to do it this way, it sounds like. Yeah. So your mother had a stroke. Talk to us about that.
Well, I had her on the phone, and I was asking her, you know, the phone rang for a long time, and her answering machine came on. So I was leaving a long message, and then all of a sudden she answered the phone, and her voice sounded kind of strange. And I said, Mom, you know, how are you? What were you doing? I don't know. Mom, where are you? I don't know. Mom, can you walk? I don't know. Everything was I don't know. And then I said, Mom, I'm going to call, because I was in New York and she was in Montana. And I said, Mom, I'm going to call an ambulance. No, no, he won't remember me. Who won't remember you? He won't remember. We went on like this for a long time. So finally I said, Mom, can you walk? And she could. And I said, go downstairs if you can and open the side door so that someone can come in. Can you do that? She actually did that while I was on the phone with her because the stroke was happening and it was sort of affecting her speech first. The stroke eventually, you know, sort of affected her left side. And then when she was sitting on the couch and after she had opened the door, I told her I was going to call an ambulance, which I did.
Mm-hmm.
And they arrived. And, of course, I didn't have any numbers of ambulances. And it took me about 5 minutes to finally think of calling the hospital because my mind felt like it was just totally out of control.
Oh, bad. So this was the beginning of you becoming a caregiver just out of the blue.
Out of the blue.
Tell us what happened then. She ends up in an assisted living home.
Well, she actually returned home.
Mm-hmm.
And we hired somebody to sort of take care of a few things, which lasted not that long. But my sister and I and my two other sisters, we took turns flying out there. One time when I flew out there, I sort of helped her learn how to drive again so that she could, you know, she could get around pretty well. Her speech was kind of affected, but she also had a lot of friends that helped her too. Mm-hmm. So she lived at home for about another year.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then she broke her hip.
Then she broke her hip, and they basically said she couldn't return home without 24/7 care.
Oh, that's when the transition starts for you and her, because at first she didn't know she was being taken into a home, right? She thought she was going to be able to go back to her home.
She always thought that, and mm-hmm. that's sort of the title of the book, Take Me Home. Even in the assisted living place, she called it a hospital. She was a nurse and actually did her nurse's training at this hospital that was then turned into an assisted living place.
Mm.
And she kept calling it a hospital and was wanting to return home, but she actually never did. But I did keep her a condo for her, and whenever I would visit, I would take her home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you talk about that in the... So from your experience, do you believe that you should keep some information from elders for their own comfort? Talk to us about what you learned from that.
Oh, I definitely think that you should be honest, to tell you the truth. We told Mom, that she was in the assisted living place and, that she had to stay there, but she just would forget. But I felt like it was very important to be honest with her.
Mm-hmm. Even if she couldn't comprehend it at every moment, right?
It helped me just to be more present.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like when you keep something from somebody and you're not quite totally present.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. You also asked this really interesting question. When transitioning your mom to an assisted living, from a very independent life, you said, is it more ethical to worry about her safety or her health and spirit? To talk to us a little bit about what you concluded with that question.
Well, that was really a difficult dilemma because she stayed at home probably longer than she should have because of that very subject. She was a very independent woman.
She was an accomplished artist and so on, right?
That's right. But all of this happened after my father died. It was as though she sort of came into her own, and she got her own condo, and she decorated it, and it was just like it was Mom's temple. And
mm-hmm.
So to have her leave that was just heartbreaking. And, I was worried that she would sort of lose that sense of her spirit moving into another place. And when I visited, that spirit came back, but I think a lot of the time she just sort of wasted time, staring into space.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So what is your conclusion about that? More ethical to worry about her safety or her health and spirit? What would you say now?
Well, I would say that you can't just make that decision without being ready to make it in some way. Like, I would definitely have had to move her into assisted living sooner mm-hmm. or later, knowing that it probably would, affect her spirit because she was falling and basically really couldn't take care of herself. And I, being so far away, there's no way I could have handled 24/7 care.
Oh, yeah, most families can't. I mean, that's just a fact.
Right, or you could get visiting nurses to come in. Like with my father-in-law, he had 24/7 care in his home,
mm-hmm,
which
mm-hmm.
Happened to work out because of Medicaid. But it's heart-wrenching, and it's a decision that requires really a lot of suffering.
Yeah, no, I know. I can tell by you. You talk very eloquently about it in your book. So it sounds to me like you would say safety is protecting the spirit, in some ways.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, I think there's a point where you just realize that the physical suffering is not worth the, kind of the spirit suffering.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that they kind of go together.
Yeah, it sounds like they do suddenly, become one thing to worry about. Now, you admit in your book that you never told your mother that she was dying because you were afraid of death and
yes.
dying. So tell us about how this experience affected you. Did it deepen or change your ideas about this? Did it make you less afraid? Talk to us about that.
Well, just before that experience, we decided to move Mom because she was alone in Montana, and we knew that she was probably going to have a stroke because that's sort of the direction she was moving into. And we realized that if she did have a stroke and she couldn't talk, she would just be stuck there. So my younger sister found a really beautiful assisted living place in Oregon near her.
Mm-hmm.
And there was an opening. And my mom really trusted me. And I remember her talking her into this move. And she was very kind of dubious about it. But I, tried to explain, what would happen if you got disabled here, you'd end up in a nursing home and, nobody could visit you or talk to you on a daily basis. So she finally did decide. One morning she woke up and she said, "What do people wear in Oregon?" And I said, "Mom, did you make that decision?" And she said, "Yep." And so she said, "I trust you totally." So I had her help me pack her suitcases, and I went to the airport with her and flew there with her. Oh, and by the way, when I arrived in Great Falls to take her there, she didn't remember that she was moving, and so I had to go through the whole thing again and talk her into it. So by the time we got to Oregon, I felt like I had just been through a ringer.
Yeah.
And 2 weeks after she was there, she had a major stroke. And I, for some reason, felt like I caused it. And I couldn't get this emotion out of my mind. It was like I felt like I should never have moved her.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe she wouldn't have had this stroke. And finally, I had to talk to my Native American friend, who was really a key figure during this, just making complex things very simple.
Yeah, I was going to bring him up. His name is Don, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I was going to ask you about him.
Yeah.
Go ahead and tell us about him.
Okay. But he said to me, this is why you moved her. And so when my mom was close to death, I couldn't tell her that she was dying because I was too afraid to see her respond. And
mm-hmm.
It was really me facing my own death.
Mm-hmm.
And so, anyway, Don was a very important figure in this journey. Very early on, when Mom was in rehab, again, I was woken up one morning very early, like around 4 o'clock in the morning, and it was still dark out. And there's a sacred Native American site outside Great Falls called the Pishkin. And it's, about 10 miles off the freeway, down this kind of winding gravel road, and it's out in the middle of the prairie of sagebrush and these shale ledges where they used to run the buffalo over the cliffs. And now there's some very old sweat lodges up there that the Blackfoot tribe made there as part of a tourist attraction, although there's not many people that go there. So this morning I drove out there and I parked my car, and I was a little afraid. I was walking, to the edge of these cliffs, which was about a mile away from the car, and it was just so unbelievably spiritual, just in the sense of the constellation Orion was overhead and the stars were so bright, and just being out there alone somehow just... It was just, I can't even describe it. And I felt the spirit of the land as well as the Native American way of being on the land, that kind of reverence for life. And it just really got into me. And so when I came back to town later in the day, I went to a secondhand store where they sell a lot of Native American boots and blankets and things, and I asked if there was a person who did sweat lodges, and this woman gave me the number of Don, who I called later in the day, and he he became a very important figure. He did ceremonies with me. He even actually did one with me and my mom, who was a little afraid at first, but she actually got into it, and he did a blessing for her trip to Portland.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Lizza C. Johnson. We're talking about her book, Take Me Home, Walking on Sacred Ground in the Last Stage of Life. Now, Lizza, let's continue with your experience with Don. So did he help you overcome your fear of death and dying, and or did this experience help you deepen your ideas about it? Tell us more about that. I'm sure many people go through this fear of death and would love to hear what your experience was about this.
Well, it gave me sort of a place to find comfort within, that there was really a sense that, like the symbol of the sweat lodge, which is the picture on the book, I had actually somebody, a photographer in Great Falls, I called him up from New York and I told him exactly the picture I wanted, because the sweat lodge is a place where it's a very sacred ceremony. It's age-old, and it's a place where, you know, members of the tribe dialogue with the others who've passed on.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so in the Blackfoot world, there's no word for goodbye. And so that really was something that I, you know, kept taking in as I, you know, took this journey with Mom. And I began to find a place within that I called my inner home. And, you know, most of the time, I would say probably 80% of the time, I could find this place of refuge. It was also a place of inner stillness that helped me think very clearly about my role in Mom's journey, because I tended to myself as much as Mom. I was really on a spiritual journey, and it was very important for me to take into account my own experience, and I think that really was a really big healing thing where I didn't feel I was really sacrificing a lot.
Yeah, well, I think that's quite a revelation that there's no word for goodbye. There shouldn't be in some ways. We believe in the circle of life. Yeah,
yeah,
that's really interesting. I mean, now you stated in something that I read about you that your work as a psychotherapist is based on a belief that each individual has a deep longing to wake up their inner voice. Can you talk to us a little bit about that? Did this experience help you wake up, you know, your inner voice more so than perhaps before?
Absolutely, because I think when you connect to that inner voice, which I believe is sort of that, is the soul, you know, it's mm-hmm. that, it's that eternal, endurable, unflappable place that when we kind of can tune into that and that be sort of a guide for mm-hmm. our life, that we're not thrown around as much by things. I mean, I'm not saying that we're not thrown around, but you can find that center of the wheel.
That's right. I was going to say, I consider that my center, you know, that feeling of self that's incredibly planted to the earth in some ways.
Yes, and it's not something that comes out of necessarily the rational mind. I think it comes out of sort of a combination of the mind and also, let's say, the unconscious, if you will, not viewed in terms of like Freud, which is, you know, repressed material, but the unconscious is that unknowable linked part of us that is linked to sort of the unknowable part of the universe, where I do believe there is sort of an intelligence that can be there and accompany us as well as that inner guide.
Mm-hmm. And I also believe that unconscious and that mysterious, whatever you want to call it, brings us, you know, our voice in many ways. We have to tune in some ways. I always think creative people are tuning in to something mysterious like that.
I actually think that the creative, we all have a creative spirit, and I do believe it is that voice.
Mm-hmm.
Whether you're creative in how you clean your house, or whether you're creative in, you know, how you drive home, whatever it is, it doesn't have to be, this work of art or anything, mm-hmm. but it's a willingness to kind of be carried along by, sort of an inspiration.
Yeah, I want to ask you this, too. Did you ever worry that publishing this very personal book would leave you kind of vulnerable as a therapist? And, clients coming to you for strength and wisdom, and you do show your vulnerability in this.
It popped into my mind once in a while, but it really, I had more of a feeling that if I shared this, it would be a gift. And, if people were turned off by it, then so be it. But, I felt like it was my gift.
Mm-hmm. It's an offering.
Uh-huh. Yes, that's right.
I understand that. So what kind of feedback have you gotten from some of your clients and patients?
Well, I've gotten really, really great feedback, and especially from a place called Body and Soul in Huntington, where I started to work out a lot, and there's cardio classes and yoga classes, and everybody there was just like totally excited. They said I put words to their experience. There were feelings that people had that they were ashamed of that I was able to articulate. Then I also gave some talks at the library and et cetera, and people were very moved by that sense of the deeper self that I talk about,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and wanted to know more about it, and kind of that sense of being accompanied by a larger wisdom when you take the time to connect with yourself and find a place of inner stillness and an interest in self-knowledge.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Doesn't it seem strange to you that people have to learn that? It seems to me human beings should be able to know how to connect with themselves just by being born, It seems so strange to me.
I know, but, we're given so many messages, like, take this pill and you'll feel better, or, buy these clothes and, wow, you'll look great and you don't have to, think twice or get a new hairdo.
Mm-hmm.
We're so materialistic oriented that we forget that the real comfort is the relationship to ourselves.
Yeah, I know. The modern world really has not been conducive to the soul, I would say. Now, the second half of your book has a self-help section, and, in the first part of it, you ask people to share stories, caregivers and people who have gone through these experiences. Talk to us a little bit about that. It's very fascinating.
Well, that was, I had finished the book in 2005, and I gave it to my dream teacher, Robbie Bosnack, who's a Jungian analyst, and, he said, well, why don't you make this into a self-help book? And I was thinking, a self-help book? This is like, how could I, this would be like soul murder.
The Mechanics of the Soul by Liza Johnson.
Yeah. So the idea came to me to get stories from other caregivers, and so I asked him if I could, put a call out on his website for his stories, and they came in so fast you wouldn't even believe it. So I got like 20 stories in a matter of like a month, and I realized it was a huge need for caregivers to write. And then when I read the stories, I was astounded at the incredible honesty and the hard-won wisdom. And it took me a while to organize them into those categories. Waking up to dependency, when one experiences all those little, fires in the kitchen and et cetera. All of that is a part of waking us up,
mm-hmm.
To the fact that our parents are becoming dependent. And
mm-hmm.
then the waking up to death, of really seeing our mortality, our parents' mortality, and the role reversal that takes place, and then Alzheimer's. I had to put a section in for Alzheimer's,
mm-hmm.
That was special. And then waking up to the mystical, which is so many stories had experiences that were beyond, we're in the non-ordinary realms, and these caregivers actually acted on some of the these experiences that are really quite astounding. And, you know, so that was how I organized that part.
Yeah, it's very interesting. And it just goes back to the fact that human beings need stories. You know, we need stories in order to find out the parameters of our own lives.
Yeah, that's right, because the story really is, it's in the feeling, it's a heart realm. And so much of the caregiving is, you know, the heart realm. We don't really get much from being told how to do it or whatever, but when you hear someone's story, you resonate with it, and it somehow gives, you know, a grace and a sense of community to, you know, a task that many, many people go through alone.
Yeah, exactly. And then and they think they're alone.
Yeah.
You know, regardless of
alone.
Yeah.
Mhm. That's right.
Now, I'm also interested in the fact that you're a graduate of the International Institute for Embodied Imagery and Dream Work. Tell us about that. Is that a Jungian study or something else?
Well, that was one of the best experiences of my life. It's an institute formed by Dr. Robert Bosnak. He's now opening a clinic in, he's opened it with Steven Eisenstadt, the founder of Pacifica, an Asclepian-based hospital on the placebo effect in healing cancer. So he doesn't really do these trips anymore, but he organized these trips to, you know, Brazil and South Africa, which was an amazing journey, and France and Iceland, where we studied the dreams of other cultures. And all of the trips were led by him as well as a local person. So we got into, you know, the Zuni tribe, we got into caves in France that most people can't get into anymore, and we would do these, you know, long dream work sessions where, you know, people, you know, worked on their dreams over a campfire, and then we would have locals come in and share their dreams. So it was really such a beautiful learning experience.
Well, then that's great.
I don't think he does them anymore.
Liza, we're almost out of time. I wanted you to be able to give some contact information in case people want to get in touch with you.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I have a website, lizajohnson.com, and my email is liza@lizajohnson.com. That's LIZA. You can also reach me on my office phone, which is 631-804-2128. My book is available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble, and it's also on Larson Publications.
That's
in
great.
Ithaca.
That's right. That's right. Okay, Liza Johnson, thank you so much for joining us. Again, the book is called Take Me Home, Walking on Sacred Ground in the Last State of Life. Liza Johnson, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much, Tish, for this opportunity.
Our audio producer is Nate Richardson at Rep Studio in Ithaca, New York. Our theme music was composed by Diego Vega. And we are a sponsored project of the New York Foundation for the Arts. Tax-deductible donations are welcome at artspire.org. That's artspire.org. And visit us online at outofboundsradioshow.com. I'm Tish Perlman. We'll be back next week.